All right, we're going to get this party started because our tummies are full. Our wine glasses have been filled. Dessert is on the table. And to my right, your left, is our FCC team of debaters. We've got Claudia Moe in this corner, Mike Rouse and Tom Holland. Tom Holland, I'll start with you. You may not recognize Tom, but you probably know of his work. Currently, he is senior editor of Gavikal Dragonomics, but former writer of the South China Morning Post's Monitor column, you will have read many of his columns. Tom Holland made sense of the latest developments in business, finance, and economic affairs in Hong Kong and mainland China. He is an FCC member. We are so privileged and honored to have you on our team. And then we've got Mike Rouse. He's former director general of InvestHK. He lived in Hong Kong since 1972, is a naturalized Chinese citizen, spent 6 years in the ICAC from 74 to 80, then 28 years in the government as administrative officer until he retired in December 2008. Retirement, though, was not for him because he's now the search director for Stanton Chase International, also hosts a radio talk show, writes regularly for both English and Chinese media. He is an FCC member, and he is the second member of our FCC debate team. Last but not least, and definitely the prettiest, Claudia Moe is a Hong Kong journalist and politician. She's a member of Hong Kong Legislative Council representing the Kowloon West Geographical Constituency. Founding member of the Civic Party, which she represented, and in 2012 she won of this constituency's, yes, I talk for a living, excuse me, but I'm off right now. Constituency's 5 available seats. Mo is a former journalist, having worked for AFP, well, also, you can be anything you want, Claudia. The Standard, TVB, you've seen her work, you see her here, she is an FCC member, and she makes up the last, not least, definitely the prettiest of our FCC debate team. All right, to my left and your right, we've got the Hong Kong Schools Debate Club. Let's introduce first Aspen Wang. She just finished her IB at the Chinese International School and will be heading off to Princeton in a few days. La-di-da, good luck. She has represented HK in the World International Debating and Public Speaking Championships, and she was Hong Kong team captain. She's member of HK World Schools Debating Team 2015. Give it up for Aspen Wang. Sitting next to her is Petra Ho. She still has one more year at German-Swiss International School. She represented Hong Kong at WID PSC in Durban 2013 and Lithuania 2014. She's a member of the Hong Kong World Schools Debating Team, and she is the second member of this team tonight, facing off against FCC. Last but not least, also very pretty, Pavan Hegde. He just finished the IB at South Island School and will be heading off to Harvard, la-di-da, in a few days. He has represented Hong Kong in the World Schools Debating Championships in Cape Town 2012 and Antalya, Turkey 2013. And in fact, both Petra and Pavan are members of the 2015 Hong Kong World Schools Debating Team. And we look forward to that. All right. This is your team for Hong Kong Schools. Let the debating begin.
Okay. Do I get the bell ding? have you to get. This is really tall. So how do you do the time count? It's very high. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just so proud to present the motion tonight, and that is, this House supports Occupy Central as a way to press for universal suffrage in Hong Kong. Now, this motion is particularly uniquely Hong Kong because Occupy Central, which is just down the road, and we're talking about universal suffrage in this town. Now, some people would say, well, universal suffrage, that's one man, one vote. What's the big deal? Peking or Beijing, Chris Patton used to say, I speak proper English, so it's Peking, not Beijing, never mind. Now, Peking says, or Beijing says, one man, one vote, as long as you get that, that's universal suffrage. So, no worries, guys. But this is Hong Kong, and we have our unique problems. One country, two systems, with a high degree of autonomy. But how high is this high degree stuff? It's all, again, according to our big brother. They decide how much they could give you. They want to give you. And they're determined. It's obvious to all here. We have this intellectual audience gathered tonight. We all understand how Beijing is trying very hard to pre-screen. What?
Point, please. Point.
Sorry. Yes, yes, okay.
How do you think the Occupy Central movement will affect the economy of Hong Kong?
I haven't come to that yet. I barely started. Never mind. Ignore. Now, listen, guys. I barely started to fight against that. You see, that's the point of interrupting. So rude, right? Now I forgot what I put down here. Now, guys, if we really want true democracy in this city, and I seriously mean it, we need to fight. And we've done everything we can. July the 1st, I'm sure many, many of you were there too to witness what Hong Kong people actually go after. And hunger strikes and what have you. The latest, ladies and gentlemen, is there's a hysterical, near hysterical campaign against Occupy Central, sort of, you know, suspected to be generated, mobilized officially. You see all those signature campaign stores around town, and you would wonder who's the organizer behind that, right? Well, that proves Occupy Central has actually become a real threat to those people, the Beijing loyalists. They're scared. They don't want Occupy Central to actually happen because it just might work. Now, our motion tonight didn't talk about the effectiveness of this action, but we have to at least try it. It's a way to press for true democracy in town. And of course, Occupy Central is civil disobedience. And it's illegal. Of course it's illegal. And for CY Leung to say, oh, we don't do illegal things, it's just, no swear words. We promise you, and the organizer, the mover behind the campaign, by the name of Benny Tai, a legal academic with the Hong Kong University, promises everyone that we're not going to do Occupy Central very lightly. It's a big deal for Hong Kong. And unless we have exhausted all means, in particular legal means, to get what we want, to fight for what we actually think is right and just for Hong Kong, for the next generation. We're not doing it yet, but it would serve as one
Excuse
last
me, ma'am,
resort.
Are you sure that you've exhausted all other possible resorts to gain more universal suffrage?
We're talking about the definition of civil disobedience, right? You can't just, oh, I don't like this FCC regulation, so I would start throwing about wine glasses. This is civil disobedience. You don't do that. We live in a decent society, a civilized society. When it comes to civil disobedience, ladies and gentlemen, remember Gandhi. Remember Nelson Mandela. And remember, ladies in particular, the women's suffrage movement at the start of the last century in the UK. In that particular society, then, things are supposed to be all open and democratic. Women don't have a vote. Well, I mean, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't matter. We go home, do cooking, have tea. What are the big fusses about this women's right to vote issue? They made it. Hunger strikes, if you've seen any documentary type of dramas on the issue. Yes?
That's exactly the point that we have on our side of the house, that Occupy Central, by its nature, does not involve these kinds of actions such as hunger strikes. It's very tame. So can you please tell us how this is an effective way of pressing for universal suffrage?
Now, first of all, can I clarify again? Our motion doesn't talk about the effectiveness of Occupy Central, because we don't know yet. The main point is, guys, you fight, you may not get what you want, but if you don't fight, you simply won't get what you want. And things are bound to be getting worse as far as Hong Kong is concerned. They're looking for martyrs, obviously. Oh, if you want a very effective social or political movement, you need martyrs. You need people who are prepared to sort of die of hunger strike or being taken to hospital to be force-fed. That happened 100 years ago. And I wish the ladies and the audience in particular tonight would realize we just need to do something. We can't promise it will work, but you must get something started. But then we're not starting it very casually anyway, right? And the last, but not, what about the time? How come nobody's telling me how much time? Huh? Well, you have to make it more clear. I don't know what you're doing there. 1 minute, okay, 1 minute. Now, guys, you must be reminded, the official proper Occupy Central campaign comes with a slogan, Occupy Central with love and peace. Now, we can't guarantee there's not going to be any violence. God knows, they may plant decoys or ruffians or moles in the crowds and start some scuffles or something. I hope not. But we need to get things started, and Hong Kong needs to get a true fight.
15 seconds.
You're the timer there. 15 seconds? Okay. Okay. Now, guys, we need to draw attention to Hong Kong's fight for true democracy. Not just one man, one vote. Candidate A, C.Y. Leung, candidate B, C.Y. Wong, and candidate C, C.Y. Chan. No, we need true democracy. We need not just local, but international attention to this entire issue. Thank you.
We remember Gandhi and we remember Mandela, but for some reason we don't remember that this debate is not about whether Occupy Central is good or if universal suffrage is good for Hong Kong. It is about whether Occupy Central is the best vessel to achieve such a reality in Hong Kong. And that is why side opposition believes the effectiveness,
yeah.
No, thank you, sir, for now, is very crucial to this movement. Sorry, I'll take you some time later. So today in my speech, I want to look at the issues of support base of the movement, the pan-democratic movement, and the potential of the movement. My second speaker will look at further Hong Kong's relations with China. But before I move on, I want to address some of the issues that Claudia Mo has so graciously brought up today. Now, the first thing she said, it was the urgent issue of how there hasn't been a lot of improvement in the recent years. Yes, we can concede to that, but at the same time, that doesn't justify why this means is the best means to go about to solve the issue. How have you shown that this is the last resort and that you've exhausted other possibilities of compromise, which I'll talk about later on in my speech? Secondly, you never really addressed the issue of how you would exactly pressure the government.
Points of information?
I'll take you in a moment, ma'am. It was conflicted in terms of, on the one hand, there's not going to be a real threat, so you don't really have leverage against the government to pressure them into giving in to demands for universal suffrage. But on the other hand, there is threat, so it hurts people's livelihoods. So we don't see which side of the bargain that you're really trying to address here. Yes, ma'am, thank you. Yep, I can take your point now. Sorry.
You were talking about Occupy Central not being the best way to do this. We're not arguing about what's best. We're talking about Occupy Central as a way only.
Because the motion says this House supports Occupy Central, it would be more than just saying this is a way or even the last resort way that we want to put at the bottom of our list. So we'd like to see more benefits about the movement and not just a possible way to go about it. Now, moving on to my main substantive, the first area of pan-democratic movement. We don't support Occupy Central as a means to achieve universal suffrage because in its all-or-nothing approach to achieving civil nomination in Hong Kong, it has successfully broken up the once powerful pan-democratic movement and will only continue to do so with two polemic options it has. The first option is if the pan-democrats do back down. This harms the movement's general image as it has not given itself any leeway for retreat. Any less than universal suffrage would look like a total failure on part of the movement. The second option is if it does, if it doesn't back down. It will receive reluctant support or criticism from democratic parties internally and externally. Just look at the Civic Party divided with the moderate member Ronnie Tan openly coming out to seek a compromise and objecting to the Occupy Central movement. Even the largest democratic party has quit the Alliance for True Democracy due to lack of trust and cooperation with more radical parties because of the Occupy Central movement. Once the largest political party in Hong Kong, dominating the Legislative Council, is now the 20-year-old party hangs in soul-searching limbo, beaten out by the likes of former Miss Hong Kongs in district council elections as a result of being seen too radical with Occupy Central, as cited in many SCMP articles. Now, why is all of this bad? Because we need pro-democracy factions in Hong Kong to be strong and look like legitimate alternatives to the status quo. Instead, having this fragmented pro-democracy camp with only 27 seats in a 70-member legislative council means that their ability to act as a coherent and influential political force is severely hampered, especially when it comes to legally pushing for things such as universal suffrage.
Point of information?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you realize Hong Kong's Legislative Council is actually being monopolized by pro-Beijing types because of the very unfair and twisted election system?
We really regret that that's the case right now, but what we're saying is that Occupy Central doesn't make the situation any better and actually exacerbates the divisions between the parties, between those that even support Occupy Central. Now, onto the issue of the support base. The Occupy Central movement has claimed to be a democratic movement so that it is legitimate in pushing for universal suffrage. But really, the movement as a means has failed to capture sufficient investment of interest from the Hong Kong population. In the questionable electronic poll with a primitive identity verification that they conducted, only 10% of the Hong Kong population voted. And there is the anti-Occupy movement, which did a personal ballot with numbers showing over 900,000 people actively against Occupy Central. Why is this significant? It shows that Occupy Central not only has an inadequate...
Point of information.
No, thank you, sir. And a distorted number of supporters. There is a movement bigger than that size actively against it. And then there's the 80%
Point
rest of us that you've so silently assumed consent on part of. Why is that unacceptable? Practically, it makes it difficult to achieve universal suffrage without the support of the population. Even Benny Tai, the originator of the movement, said an optimistic number of occupiers would be 1% of Hong Kong's population. Principally, it is objectionable because if democracy is about representation and power of the majority, Occupy Central is the least democratic way to promote democracy Hong Kong has seen. And especially that's not even considering the harms that the movement might bring with it. You talked about the potential harm to small businesses and to the possibly to the economy. And we say when you risk such economic and perhaps even political turmoil, we have objections to it. Because if you hypothetically do this, you definitely do not do it without the consent of people you're inadvertently harming as well. Right now, Occupy Central has not given a choice to the silent majority, that 80% who I talked about earlier, whether they would like to make the trade-off between economic stability and gaining advantages in universal suffrage. Yet if the economic and political damage were to be real, it would be hurting this exact group. Now on to final issue of the potential of the movement. Movements such as these are only strongest in their potential of public disturbance rather than when it actually occurs. But not only is its inherent value weak, even its potential for harm has faded. Take the specific form of disruption Occupy Wall Street movement did in blocking Brooklyn Bridge. After finding rows of police officers blocking their path midway, they proceeded to try and retreat back in the direction they came from. So when Occupy Wall Street, which is a much larger movement than Occupy Central, can't even sustain the momentum of support in specific instances of civil disobedience, it is highly doubtful that Occupy Central is what will push for long-lasting structural change for universal suffrage. And what's more telling is that even at the peak of Occupy Central's delicate strength, the Hong Kong government, a government that has historically preferred to appeal and appease to its people, is taking a stance. Recently, it has issued recommendations that denounced the movement as illegal, repeated it was unconstitutional, and stated that the people of Hong Kong do not support it. Chief Secretary Carrie Lam said exactly yesterday, democracy will never be achieved through civil disobedience. And this is the same Hong Kong government that would normally not risk going against its population, yet it has the guts to remain unshaken by the movement and will not capitulate to the demands for universal suffrage. So at the end of the day, if you don't even have the support of your most important ally, if you don't even have the support of the large amount of people, and if you're splitting your own Democratic Party, how can this ultimately push for universal suffrage?
Thank you, Aspen. And you've made my job very easy, because as second speaker, I'm the one who gets to rebut the opposition's main arguments. And I'm not sure that 8 minutes is really enough time to highlight all the fallacies in your debating points, but we'll do our best. Give it a go. Your first point, if I'm right, was that Occupy Central isn't the best way to push for universal suffrage. Well, you know, I mean, my copy of the motion here, the motion is, this House supports Occupy Central as a means to push for universal suffrage. Now, the key there is in those first five words. This House supports Occupy Central. Yeah? It's got nothing to do with whether it's the best way to achieve democracy or not. It's whether we support it or not. And I'm sure that when you've heard out our arguments, you will agree that we support it.
Point of information, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you, sure, Occupy Central sounds like a good idea. Can you please tell us and the audience how it is a way to push for universal suffrage? Are there any benefits arising out of Occupy Central in terms of achieving universal suffrage?
Yeah, absolutely there are. Look at what's going on around you. We wouldn't be having this conversation were it not for Occupy Central. Look at what this movement has achieved. After 17, 18 years of nothing, with LegCo completely ineffective, because LegCo is designed to be ineffective, Suddenly, everyone's talking. What happened to our universal suffrage? The mere threat of people sitting down in Chater Road has brought this to the forefront of the debate in Hong Kong. And it's got people hopping up and down. It's working. It is already being effective simply by bringing this question, this issue, to the center of the debate. It's proving remarkably effective, and they haven't even begun yet. I mean, look at the other points. There's lots of talk about how Occupy Central hurts livelihoods, how it's illegal. I'm sorry, exactly what laws have been broken? Nobody's even done anything yet. Yeah? The whole point of this movement is that it's a slow ratcheting up. All we've done so far is talk about it. The mere threat, the mere promise of future disobedience has proved remarkably effective at prompting this whole debate. And as for hurting livelihoods, that's just complete nonsense. What livelihoods have been hurt so far? I've heard lots about how this will harm Hong Kong's economy. This is complete and utter nonsense. Okay? On average, in the third quarter of each year, Hong Kong loses one working day to a typhoon. The whole place shuts down. An entire working day is lost. Now that would knock 1.5 percentage points off Hong Kong's economic output for that quarter. Do we see it in the figures? No, of course we don't. Because if someone didn't go shopping that day, they go shopping the next day.
Point, sir.
Go ahead.
What about the big four companies that have come out actively against Occupy Central? Wouldn't it hurt their employees if they joined the movement?
Well, the employees, as you may have noticed, signed a letter saying that they didn't agree with what their bosses said. Why do you think the bosses signed that pathetic advertisement in the newspapers? Because they want to do business in China, and they think by sucking up to Beijing in this way, they might get a little bit of business. Yeah, I assume you know that the auditors are desperate to get business in China because they've lost the privileged position that they had. How long is that? I've got 4 minutes. Good. All right. Well, we better whip on. The livelihoods is nonsense. As for hurting small businesses, hold on. The promise of all those thousands of people in Central sitting down on the road on a hot day, they're gonna need bottles of cold water, they're gonna want soft drinks, they're gonna need noodles brought to them. You underestimate the entrepreneurial spirit of Hong Kong business people, I tell you, because they'll be down there selling to all those thousands of customers. And meanwhile, the police will be busy totting up their overtime thinking how what they can buy with the extra money. It's great, I tell you, it's great. All right, sorry, moving swiftly on. As for this business about breaking up the pandemocrats, I'm sorry, I've lived in this town for 15 years now, and I don't remember a time when the pandemocrats were remotely unified. So as for breaking them up, that's nonsense. You say you need the pandemocratic movement to be strong. The whole point of Occupy Central, this whole movement, this whole discussion is being held because the established routes to achieve political progress through LegCo simply don't work. Right? That's why we have a program outside the institutional structure. And as for talk about this being illegal, I'm sorry, yes. Well, when Rosa Parks sat down on that seat in the front of the bus, you know, the seat that was reserved for white people and refused to move, that was illegal. Yeah? When those South African workers in Sharpeville, when they burnt their passbooks, you know, those household registration documents that restricted people's freedom of movement, that was illegal too. And when the citizens of East Berlin turned out and tore down the wall that had been built across their city by a foreign occupier, that was certainly illegal. Are you going to condemn then?
Point, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Wouldn't you agree the Occupy Central movement has driven out a lot of moderates who would want some democratic progress along with compromise?
There hasn't been any democratic progress. I don't agree at all. The whole point of this is because there is no democratic progress. And now, this civil disobedience movement, the promise of a civil disobedience movement, is finally beginning to achieve at least the debate. That's a huge step forward. And even if for those reasons alone, I commend Occupy Central to this house, and I ask every single one of you to support this movement, because finally, it has achieved a debate. And more importantly, it's got people involved. And as for this nonsense about not having the support of Hong Kong people, look, even the people who are opposed to Occupy Central, they're using the same methods. They're saying, we're going to hold a march. Do you know what happened last week? The minibus drivers union, to protest against Occupy Central, held a sit down in the street. Now, if your opposition are stealing your clothes, then I think you can say you have the support of the people at large. Ladies and gentlemen, I commend this motion to the House.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you one simple question. What's the point of pushing for something if the way you're going to go about it is actually counterproductive to what you're trying to achieve? Because the case brought up by Side Proposition does not actually stand strongly for universal suffrage. What they seem to be saying is that it seems like a good idea and that it seems like we should support it, but whether or not it actually goes towards achieving Beijing's cooperation in pushing for universal suffrage, that part we're not so sure about. So far throughout this debate, we've seen a lot of Hong Kong-centric analysis regarding how local authorities react to Occupy Central, but we also need to consider how the mainland will respond. So as second speaker, I have two main points that I want to bring up today. First of all, talking about how Occupy Central is not enough to threaten Beijing into action. Second of all, the role of foreign pressure and how that will actually affect Beijing's response. Before I begin, I would like to establish some pieces of rebuttal in response to what our opponents have so eloquently brought up. So first of all, talking about the idea of is the threat actually legitimate? Because we've heard Mr. Tom Holland talk about how the mere threat is enough to scare a lot of people and that people are actually responding, like bus driver and people like that. So on the first layer, we need to talk about the threat to companies and are businesses actually deterred by the Occupy Central movement? Because we see that the main objective of the Occupy Central protesters is for businesses to be threatened, for businesses to be scared. That's the whole reason why they choose to situate the protest in Central Business District. But ladies and gentlemen, we see that a lot of these big businesses, yes, maybe the small fishbowl shop on the side of the road may close down, but ladies and gentlemen, the big companies like Barclays, Standard Chartered, HSBC, they all have contingency plans to move to other places like Tuen Mun and Yuen Long, other places in the new territories. So just because a few people are sitting in their front lobby doesn't mean that they're going to suddenly shut down and collapse. So on the first level, we don't see how this is a threat to companies. Now, second of all, looking at being a potential threat or a perceptive threat to people's livelihoods, because we also need to consider the silent majority. Because Occupy Central, it has a referendum that only includes about 10% of the population, and the majority of Hong Kong's population includes middle classes, who ultimately what they want is stability and peace for economic growth, for not their jobs to be put in jeopardy. No, thank you, ma'am. So ultimately, sorry, sir. So ultimately, people in Hong Kong, what they want is for their jobs to be kept afloat. So by giving them this potential threat, this perceptive threat, for example, the threat that's being offered by the big four accountancy firms, you're actually turning people away from the movement of Occupy Central because they value their job and their stability and their peace in life a lot further than the potential movement that won't actually even go towards achieving anything from Beijing. So we don't see how,
please.
I'll take you in a minute, sir. So we don't see how the threat is actually legitimate. Yes, sir.
You seem very sure what everybody wants. How do you know? It's not like there's been an election or a referendum, not an official
Thank
one.
Thank you,
anyway.
Sir. We look at what Benny Tai, the organizer of Occupy Central, has done. What we've seen so far is a referendum that has 800,000 signatures. Yes, that's one part of Occupy Central. What we've also seen is that an anti-petition that's come up that's comprised of more than 900,000 signatures. So compare the two petitions and the two kind of movements, we actually see that there's more people against Occupy Central, then there's more supporting it. So yes, I do know where my sources are coming from.
Point of information, please.
No, thank you, sir. Now, moving on to my second layer of rebuttal of what is actually support for Hong Kong. So we've actually told you just now that there's 10% on one side and that there's an anti-petition of 900,000. But in the middle, we actually see a silent majority. And what they actually want is peace and stability, like I've already established. So we don't see how there's actually legitimate support of Occupy Central and how it's actually representative of the Hong Kong community as a whole pushing for universal suffrage. Now, moving on to my point, because the first idea that I want to bring up today is how Occupy Central is not enough to threaten Beijing. In any act of civil disobedience, protesters must ask themselves, how will our actions affect those who hold the power to change the status quo? Right now, Beijing has absolutely no incentive to legitimize the movement, judging by the white paper in which Beijing unequivocally reaffirmed the meaning of semi-autonomous. It is hardly likely that central authorities will acknowledge the protesters as more than a group of unruly university students with too much time on their hands.
Points of information.
No, thank you, ma'am. Now, this would all be well and good if we didn't need Beijing's support in our struggle for universal suffrage. Unfortunately, Beijing's cooperation in this is a prerequisite in order for us to move forward. So let's think of this in more realistic terms. If Occupy Central, if Occupy Central's primary objective is to somehow scare local authorities into submission, they barely stand a chance, given that the Hong Kong government has Beijing's backing to stop activists from hijacking Central. At its most optimistic estimate, why would Beijing bat an eyelash at 800,000 protesters over 1,000 miles away? We're talking about a government who manages a population
of
1.3 billion, no thank you, sir, and who must stand firm in the face of internal strife. On top of that, we have to consider the political climate in which Occupy Central is taking place. Right now, there's so much strong anti-mainlander sentiment in Hong Kong, Occupy Central will simply be regarded as another group of similarly unreasonable Hong Kongers antagonistically adding fuel to fire by creating further irritation to the mainland.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, back to my speech. We want universal suffrage just as much as our opponents do, but taking an all-or-nothing approach that was not even representative to begin with is counterproductive and will only prolong our process of achieving universal suffrage if we don't have support from Beijing. NPC delegate Jiang Dejiang coincidentally reminded Hong Kong that 2017 is not the end game. Reform should be a gradual process instead of something that just happens overnight. What we don't want to see is for Hong Kong to prematurely push for change at an unnatural pace, which will worsen relations with Beijing and cause, no thank you ma'am, the exact opposite of what
Hello?
Both sides want today. No thank you ma'am. China is liberalizing at such a fast pace, there can be no telling what will change in the coming years. The China that 25 years ago shot anti-corruption activists is not the China that today is cracking down on corrupt officials, and the China 25 years from now on will be more different still. In other words, attempting to force the hand of Beijing will cause us to move backwards if we fail to prove that we are a progressive society that is capable of moving forward with democracy. No, thank you, ma'ams and sirs. Now, looking onto the second idea of the role of foreign pressure, because our opponents might want to harp on about how Occupy Central will affect diplomacy, but even if foreign governments were to pressurize Beijing, it is highly unlikely that mainland authorities will flinch. History has shown that the central government is not easily pushed over by foreign pressure. We look at how China has held their stance despite overwhelming criticism regarding the way the Tibet occupation was undertaken. Even the UK has been lukewarm in its support, despite Anson Chan and Martin Lee's attempt to rally support at a parliamentary committee hearing in London. So in practical terms, there is no reason for the central authorities to see Occupy Central as more than a minor speck. Ladies and gentlemen, we must not forget, no thank you ma'am, we must not forget that China tends to take a long-term vision. Whether or not Hong Kong will eventually ever obtain universal suffrage, it's too early to tell. What we do know is that attempting to threaten those who hold the power to grant us universal suffrage is like whacking a beehive in the hopes that its residents will give you honey in return. Thank you.
Mm.
Okay. Is that good? Yep. I promise not to sing. This is... No, come on. Let them see me. This is the most one-sided debate I've ever taken part in. On the one hand, three clapped-out journalists who have all seen better days, let's face it. And on the other hand, three movie stars, two of whom I would willingly marry. Sorry, Alvin. Roy Allen referred to a high-level debate, and I wondered who he was going to have it with. But he also referred to going to places where public speaking is not a major theme. And I looked at my bench, and I thought, this man knows of what he speaks. But I looked, Princeton? Harvard? Come on, let's play fair. This is, you know, there's a fundamental difference in this debate. The Communist Party of China, the Communist Party of anywhere, believes that power flows down from the Politburo to the masses. No, it doesn't. Power flows upwards from the people. That is what this debate is all about. This is why the security bureaus of the world in the West are filled with Catholics, because they can better detect communists than anybody else. We have our own Pope, Xi Jinping, just as the Catholics have their Pope from Argentina, and it really doesn't matter. Because if you think that power comes down from the top to the people, then you are in a very sad state. It doesn't. Power comes from all of us. Now,
excuse me, sir.
Yes, I will marry you. What was your next question?
Do you mean respectfully that power comes from the mere 800,000 that support it, and there's equally more power of the 900,000 against it?
No, it comes from all 7 million. It comes from all 1.3 billion. And the fascinating thing about the Global Times editorial was it said, oh, you 700,000, 800,000, you don't count for anything. What about us 1.3 billion? And my answer to that is, let's give the 1.3 billion the vote and see what they think. Now, women's suffrage, I'm not too keen on that, Claudia, because I seem to remember the woman who jumped in front of the horses died and the horse was injured. And I think most of the public concern actually was about the horse. Effectiveness, civil nomination. I'm not really interested in civil nomination unless I, one of the few genuine Chinese nationals in the room tonight, am nominated. But I can relate directly to something that Aspen said, quoting the Chief Secretary. Democracy can never be achieved by civil disobedience. No, Aspen, I'm not old enough to be your father, I'm old enough to be your grandfather. Take it from me, democracy can only be achieved by civil disobedience. Those who hold the power will never willingly give it up unless they are forced to do so. Thank you.
having problems with that.
As an Indian with grandparents who actually fought for the independence in India, I don't need to be told that civil disobedience has its ways of working, ladies and gentlemen. I don't need to be schooled on how civil disobedience can do its work. And opposition today has never been to tell you that civil disobedience is a wrong idea. When Gandhi was talking to James Walker, he said that the purpose of a civil reactor is to cause and provoke a response. Opposition asks, where is the response when it comes to Occupy Wall Street? Sorry, Occupy Central. I'm sorry. When it comes to Occupy Central, we see an anti-Occupy. We see 1%, if at all, of the population standing up to support for it. And we say that this is not good enough when it comes to Occupy Central to actually achieve any kind, or even press for, as they've made it a big deal in this debate, for any kind of change. No, thank you, ma'am. So we say at the end of this debate, we've really come down to a couple of ideas. The first of which is whether Occupy Central is a big or good thing, which is what the first two speakers spent a majority of their time dealing with on their side of the house. They've told us that we need Occupy Central. Occupy Central has good principles, and these principles are something we should all follow, as Mr. Rouse told us. We agree. We say that universal suffrage is something we've been talking about ever since we've become one country, two systems, ladies and gentlemen. Occupy Central has not increased the debate, as Mr. Holland said, about universal suffrage. We've been debating about that even before Occupy Central came into existence. No, thank you, sir.
Go on, please.
No, thank you, sir. What we say that Occupy Central has been able to do is it's been able to garner not enough support to push for any kind of change. And we say that's why it is not a good enough way or a vessel to press for universal suffrage. And that's the issue we have in this debate. Yes, ma'am.
What's good enough then?
See, that's the issue, right? We want a method that progresses.
But that's not what we're debating. What's the best? We're just saying Occupy Central is a way to press for universal suffrage in Hong Kong.
Ma'am,
Why are you going astray?
Ma'am, I am not going astray. I am talking about whether Occupy Central, be it a way of many, has any method of achieving anything. And we say that when it comes to universal suffrage, Occupy Central, even if it isn't the best way, thank you for admitting that, by the way, it is not even a good enough way to cause any form of development when it comes to the issue of universal suffrage. And that's our problem on this side of the house. When Ms. Mo asked me just now, what is it that we find to be the best way? We say that a method that guarantees progressive change, something that doesn't put all at stake like Occupy Central does.
You haven't answered my question, so what is the
best? Ma'am, I believe I have. I'm going to move on in this speech. Thank you. But when it comes to talking about whether or not Occupy Central has the ability to succeed, we say that opposition is the one with the substance in this debate to tell you that it does not have any form of ability to cause significant change. The second idea in this debate was the idea of whether there is a threat of civil disobedience and whether that threat of civil disobedience is enough to justify or cause any kind of change. The issue here is that the threat and the potential of Occupy Central comes with, at best, 700,000 people, something that is not enough to push any kind of leverage on the central government or cause any kind of change. We say that even if it isn't the best way, no, thank you, sir, to solve any of these issues, we say that it is not good enough, it does not have enough support, and there are more than that against it who are going to stop it from achieving anything. And we say that that in itself is a fundamental problem when it comes to the equation of Occupy Central. But we say, ladies and gentlemen, that at the end of the day, even if this threat has consequences that exist, they, on their side, are taking these consequences on the general population. They're saying everyone will face these consequences if they so do exist, without taking into consideration all the view. And I am pointing to the silent majority in this case. How can we assume that they are okay with Occupy Central and any, if at all, its consequences if we do not take them into representation? And we say that that is an issue when it comes to Occupy Central. Yes, sir.
If this supposed majority is silent, how come you know so well what they think?
Sir, this is why on our side of the house, we have told you only that they do not support Occupy Central, because they are in
how
the
do you
middle.
Know?
Because they have not voted for the referendum that Occupy Central. No, thank you, sir.
Maybe they went down the beach.
Maybe they did, and it's been quite good weather recently, so I hope they did, so you know. But regardless of that equation, we say that they haven't supported either side, and that's why we can't assume their support in any form of civil disobedience, because if it does have consequences, it is going to affect them, regardless of whether or not they have expressed explicit consent. And that's what we say is a fundamental problem when it comes to Occupy Central. The final issue in this debate was this idea that Occupy Central, in a way, will be able to make China or Beijing scared in terms of its political leverage, or create a form of international discussion. We say, ladies and gentlemen, that international discussion, insofar that it talks about Occupy Central, has not been very big. We see that Britain itself, when asked to support Occupy Central, refused to do so. In fact, David Cameron came out and said that the Sino-British relationship should be strong rather than weak in these circumstances, explicitly denying any kind of involvement when
Point
it comes to Occupy Central. No, thank you, ma'am. We say when there is no international discussion, when there are no international actors who are out there trying to support Occupy Central, we see it is very unlikely that China or the central government will conform or bend to any kind of public pressure. China, as my second speaker mentioned, has its own issues to deal with, a bigger population, more civil unrests. This is a fly on the window for China, ladies and gentlemen. No, thank you, ma'am. And we say that's why Occupy Central, by its very nature, will not be able to solve any of the issues that Proposition made big. So at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, what are we doing with Occupy Central? We have created a system where we've created a party bigger than Occupy Central that opposes it. We have less than 1% of the population actually supporting Occupy Central. And at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, we have a situation where we're implementing consequences on people who may not explicitly express their consent for it. Opposition today does not disagree with civil disobedience. Opposition today does not believe that Hong Kong does not deserve universal suffrage. We want universal suffrage. We love and believe in Hong Kong. What we don't agree with is that Occupy Central can push for this kind of change. Thank you.
I'm afraid I can't match the beauty of Claudia Moe, or the intellect of Mr. Holland, or the charm and wit of my first marriage proposal. But all I can do is bring you back to the actual focus of the debate, is why Occupy Central is the actual means, or at all a legitimate means, to bring about universal suffrage in Hong Kong. I want to look at this debate through three lenses. The first lens is through this idea of threat and harm. Is Occupy Central really threatening in any way that's causing legitimate change? Not really. In my first speech and in my second speaker's speech, we talked about this potential threat, but how even at its height of potential, the Hong Kong government isn't responding in the way that they want to for progress in terms of the universal suffrage front. Now we look at the other idea of harm, the damage to the economy. On the one hand, they want to say there's no harm. Then doesn't your potential a threat just not be effective in that way? Then there's no threat to begin with. And then the second thing is that there is actual harm. But then we say you destroy livelihoods and you don't even ask the people who you're destroying the livelihoods if they're okay with this whole process. And furthermore, you never even considered the idea of how this would turn people away from the democratic progress because of what you're threatening their lives and economy with. But next on to the issue are the second loves of support. On the one hand, they said, yes, we have the support of the people. And with us, on our side, we back it with figures and facts. And we told you, no, if you look at these polls, you clearly have those that support it, a small minority, and a slightly larger minority actively against it. And there's the large apathetic majority. Neither side can assume what this apathetic majority wants. But if you're pushing for democracy, the least you can do is stand up and say that you want it. We're not going to force it onto you, ladies and gentlemen. And if this apathetic majority isn't even bothered enough to show that they want it, why does the Occupy Central movement think it's the most legitimate way to give it such universal suffrage? And not only that, we look at how it fractures the kind of pan-democratic movement. And on their side, they said, they've always been disorganized. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're saying, try not to make them any less organized in this case. We're thinking the Occupy Central movement only exacerbates the situation that we have here. And finally, onto the issue of practicality, which they've been so keen to avoid, because they just realize they can't win on this issue, because they don't have the support of the Hong Kong government, the Chinese government, or even the international community that's just not very sympathetic in general. And we think this is really important, because if you want legitimate change, and more than just discussion that's been brewing for the past decades, then you have to have the support at least one of these stakeholders, but none of which Occupy Central is gaining by their kind of methods of civil disobedience. So at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, if we look at these three criteria of threat and harm, support, and practicality, we can pledge by the same principles of side proposition and say, we love universal suffrage and we want Hong Kong to achieve it someday, but we don't think Occupy Central is the way to go about it. I enjoy this debate because there has been a lot of beautiful rhetoric, themes of one love and democracy, but we have to conclude Occupy Central is not the best way or legitimate way or an effective way in ensuring the dream that we all share in this room.
Thank you very much. It's my honor and privilege to wrap up. How long have I got? 4 minutes, so I'd better speak quickly then. I just want to go over some of these arguments just to make sure they're fresh in your mind when you get to cast your vote to decide that we win. Thank you. Occupy Central. Remember what the motion is here. This House supports Occupy Central. And as Claudia pointed out, one good reason to support Occupy Central is that it is clearly being effective. The sheer hysteria of those who are opposed to democracy and universal suffrage in Hong Kong shows that they are running scared. Occupy Central has got them on the run. It is working. The more support we give it, the more it will achieve. The argument that it won't achieve anything is simply wrong. Now, I'm not going to belabor you too much. I realize that you are young. You might not remember 10, 11 years ago, the Article 23 debate. Article 23 of the Basic Law, if you remember, required that Hong Kong passes sweeping security legislation. For example, it would bang you up for suggesting that perhaps Taiwan might not be a part of China. And if you remember, well, there was a great debate about a number of people who marched in the streets on July the 1st, 2003. 500,000, 700,000 marched from Victoria Park to Central. It went on all day. An enormous number of people, very peaceful march, not one single arrest, by the way. Do you know what happened? The Hong Kong government and the Beijing government backed down completely. Article 23 has not been heard of again. It was a huge victory for the people of Hong Kong, marching in the streets, operating outside of the rigged institutional structure that was designed to make sure they have no voice. And the people of Hong Kong made sure their voice was heard by marching in the street. So when you say that Occupy Central can achieve nothing, I beg to differ, and I can cite evidence. Just look at the Article 23 debate. And that brings me to the final point I make, because I could go on all night. But to say that this sort of movement will only put Beijing's back up, I tell you what, Beijing is a closed door, and you have to lean mighty hard on that door to get it to open even an inch. If you don't lean, it won't open. And I think, I don't know if we've got any members of our diplomatic community here this evening, but I can tell you that they would support that view as the foreign policy of Beijing's international interlocutors has shown time and again. You have to push very hard even to get Beijing to yield an inch. And if you don't push, they certainly won't yield. As Claudia said, you have to fight if you want to achieve your democracy. And I'll wrap up by quoting one last thing from the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, Article 21, first clause. Everyone has the right to take part in the government of his country, directly or through freely chosen representatives. That is a right. Beijing signed up, of course, to the Universal Declaration. That is a right that the Hong Kong people have. It is their right. Yeah, and it's a right that has been denied. Third clause of Article 21. The will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of the government. This shall be expressed in periodic and genuine elections, which shall be by universal and equal suffrage. That is a right. That is the right of Hong Kong people. It is a right that has been denied by universally accepted practice, by the norms. And let me remind you that the Greek word for law simply means normal practice. That is a right which has been denied. It is the right of Hong Kong people to operate outside of the institutional structure in order to demand and to achieve their rights in law, which is universal suffrage. Occupy Central very gently pursues those rights, and that's why I commend the motion to the House. Thank you very much.
Wow. Oh, so good. Let's give it up for our debaters tonight. Great job. Really great job. Thank you so much. It is a debate that rages on, but at least for tonight, it was a wonderful start. Thank you so much. All right, audience, you will be asked to decide the winner of tonight. Very integral vote, because we will determine whether or not we have reclaimed the trophy at FCC, or if we have once again lost it to the bright young minds heading off to Harvard and Princeton and the rest. But our future is bright nonetheless, so we're all winners here tonight. Thank you. Okay, so for those of you who agree that this House supports Occupy Central as a way to press for universal suffrage, if you support and agree with the arguments pressed forth by the FCC team, please raise your hands.
Could I just draw my children's attention to the fact that their pocket money is dependent?
I noticed that they are not holding up their hands. My goodness, must not be very much. I'm trying to help you out, kids. All right. If you are against the motion of this House supporting Occupy Central as a way to press for universal suffrage, as argued very brilliantly by this team, Hong Kong Schools Debate Club, please, a show of hands. Okay. All right, as they tally up the vote, I want to bring up Ben Allen from the Hong Kong Schools Debate Club. Oh, wait, no undecideds. Oh, who's undecided? Francis. Yeah. Throw out that vote. Let me introduce Ben Allen to come and make a special announcement allow our guests a little time to do some housekeeping. They wanted to use our special event as an opportunity to make a special announcement on their behalf.
Thank you very much, Angie. So I'll try to keep this short, but basically I want to talk about three things, the past, the present, and the future. So I talk about the past because, unfortunately, about 2 months ago, we had to make a very, very tough decision. Some of the bright young minds here who are part of the national team this year, after many months of hard work, would ultimately not have the opportunity to go to the World Championships in Thailand because of the unfortunate military coup. And so this event basically acts as a kind of swan song for them before they go off to Harvard, Princeton, and all the sorts of wonderful places that they have to look forward to. And so on behalf of the charity, the organization, and especially the coaches who have worked so long with them, we also like to take this opportunity to basically wish them a very, very fond farewell. So the two identical twins, Justin and Austin, one of them's over in the back there, you've been with us for 5, 6, 7 years now, and it's been great watching you guys grow up. Pavan, your jovial presence will definitely be missed, and Aspen, you might have been a slightly bit later in joining the community, but your presence will definitely be missed, and you've showed us the true meaning of building morale in South Africa when you were captain of one of the teams last year. So a round of applause for the four people who are leaving the national team this year and have served Hong Kong so proudly. But I also have to emphasize that that's not necessarily a sad past, and that dose definitely doesn't mean that the second thing I want to talk about is a sad present. Because one of the very happy things that we have to announce today is in conjunction with the previous announcement that we're hosting the World Championships in Hong Kong next year. And in recognition of this special occasion, as well as the fact that we have one person in this room today who has so consistently served our community with a standard of excellence which is unmatched, essentially, and has provided us with so much support in volunteering to be an administrative assistant during the period when we were incorporated as a charity, in being the only member of both national teams this year, as well as a standing and outstanding member of our Flashpoint charity program. It's my pleasure on behalf of the community to say that we've appointed Ms. Petra Ho as the captain of the World Individual Championships next year in the capacity of being the figurehead of all students for student involvement in the upcoming event. We're very, very proud and happy for her involvement. So the final thing, might be cheating a bit to call this the future, because I'm talking about the immediate future, and I'm gonna propose that we do an alternate sort of occupying Central. After all, the club is in Central, we're all here tonight. And I would say that it's been a wonderful evening, it's been a wonderful event, thank you everyone for attending, and we will occupy Central tonight, not in a spirit of civil disobedience or anything like that, but in a mood of revelry and happiness and appreciation for everything that's happened so far. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, Ben. All right, now for the winner. Let's bring in PricewaterhouseCoopers. No? Okay, here we go. And the winner, oh my gosh, this is really, really tight. It's... Okay, wait. Is this the winner right here? Wing?
For the FCC team, they have 40 votes, and for the Hong Kong school team, they have 41 votes. So.
Oh! Francis Moriarty, you cost us the tie. You were undecided. We threw out your vote. It was Mike's children. Mike's children. Wow.
What? You're disowned. You're disowned, both of you.
Well, congratulations. What a narrow win. But once again, we got schooled by the kids. Congratulations to the Hong Kong Schools Debating Club. Thank you, folks, so much. On behalf of FCC and on behalf of the winners and the not winners, we are all winners tonight. Thank you all for coming, and we'll take a few more pictures, but somebody's got bragging rights, and it ain't us. Next year, another rematch. But for now, good night, and Occupy Central. Don't bring your children back next year. They're not invited. Thank you.
Hi, Mrs. Hayter.
Hi, Mrs. Hayter.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Mrs. Hayter. You're good, thank you.
Well done. French has done well. Yeah. You guys should be so there close. Next year.
So close, though. Yeah.
Very, very close. Brilliant. Absolutely.
Did Rihan not come? Or was he at the lab?
No, he just got back and then he was so tired. I wanted him to come.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's quite tiring at work.
That's your younger brother. He didn't. Oh, wow. Is the chart here as well?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Shanti?
Hey! Hello!
Hello! How are you?
Good to see you.
Is it just you?
No, just me.